Welcome to the Find Your Leadership Confidence Podcast with Vicki Nethling. You are about to discover impactful lessons that help you grow as an individual, grow your confidence, and find the positive and good within you, so you powerfully and authentically become the best version of yourself. Be sure you visit our website at www.findyourleadershipconfidence.com. While you're there, subscribe to us via your favorite network. Now tune in, get ready, and enjoy the journey of emerging as a leader of exception in the 21st century.
Welcome, everyone, to the Find Your Leadership Confidence podcast. I'm your host, Vicki Nethling, coming to you from Roswell, Georgia. The goal of this podcast is to bring topics and guests that will empower you to become the confident leader and take your business and your life to the next level. Today, I have as my guest, Carol Sanford, and let me tell you a little bit about Carol. She is a best-selling, award-winning author, business educator, summit producer, podcaster, and designer of membership communities. Her books are required reading in multiple departments from Stanford, to Harvard. For 40 years, she's collaborated with leaders to develop people and businesses to express their singular capabilities. Carol's clients include companies like Colgate, DuPont, and Seventh Generation. Google Innovative Lab uses her responsible business framework. Learn more at carolsanford.com, which we'll talk a little bit more about in our sharing of her contact information, and the Business Second Opinion podcast. Carol shares how to make a profound and lasting difference in your life, and that you start with regenerative change. She says that it is within our grasp to transform with the paradigm of systematic change and ensure we affect every level of our lives, and the possibility of personal, organizational, and even global evolution are right before us. So today, I thought we would talk about strategies to enrich the lives of your employees while also retaining their talent. It's a big topic here today in our world today with post-pandemic situations we have. Please join me in welcoming my guest, Carol Sanford.
Thank you, Vicki. So glad to be here.
Such an impressive background. Before we get started with all of the hard questions, we're going to give an easy one. Tell everybody, where do you live? Where do you call home?
Near Seattle, just north of Seattle.
Oh, beautiful area.
It is. It's raining and has been for 2 weeks, but we got past the ice and snow,
yeah.
So it's a beautiful place.
Awesome. So you, as I have been around the block a couple of times, tell us a little bit about your story. I gave all of the business side of it, but just tell us, you know, what your journey has been like to get you to where you are today.
Wow. Well, at 81 years old, that's a long journey, so we'll pick a couple highlights. I was raised a lot by my grandfather in Texas, who called me a positive contrarian, and he was half Mohawk. So I had a very interesting culture to grow up in. I went to school at UC Berkeley in the middle of the free speech movement, the war in Vietnam. I worked with some of the most famous philosophers and scientists while I was there, Thomas Kuhn, who set the course of my life. He wrote a lot about the scientific revolution and paradigms, and that became the foundation of what my work is based on. I have for 50 years now, you said 40, I thought, well, that's an old bio, gotta update that one. This is my 50th year. Writing the books I've written, and I had to learn to write because I was a terrible writer, but I had things that were important to say. So I started writing about 15 years ago, and I've won several of 37 awards for writing, and four number one Amazon bestsellers.
Awesome.
So
that's
who I am. Yeah.
So in all of the years that you've been, I guess, giving counsel and coaching people and businesses, how has the last 3 years, you know, surviving through this pandemic, changed the strategy that employers need to look at for attracting and keeping, retaining those talented employees?
Well, I think it's the same one that's been around for 100 years, but paid attention to by almost no one. So the real key is talent exists in every human being you touch. Most of it's undeveloped. And so if you want to have the very best talent, it's right there in your shop. You just have to spend time with the creating culture of development, and then find a way for people to put that to use with an important contribution, not just a job description. And so I designed work systems for 45 years that did that, created developmental cultures and work design that lets everybody make a difference and not compete to be at the top of anything.
Yeah, that's a great thing. You know, and I wholeheartedly agree with that. The companies that I've been with that spent time and money to develop their people, those were the companies that had people that worked there for 20 and 40 years.
Yes.
And the companies that didn't do that had a hard time keeping them to get their 10-year anniversary reward of some sort. So you wrote about you write blogs all the time. So what is the most, let's just talk about what is the most recent blog that you might have written that talks about talent and developing your talent in your offices?
Well, I read a lot about that actually on Substack. That's where I post a few times a month. And there I talk about the errors that exist that keep us from doing some of what you said and to question it. I'm writing one I'm about to post that is really about the 8 errors that keep us from designing the right kind of work system. And the first one is that we design everybody facing inward. So that means you think about how your company is doing, they're doing, and not how your customers and markets and the world is doing. And the minute we create that kind of work design, where it's internally focused, people become internally considering. And like if you have performance reviews, the odds are good. People become focused on themselves and not what they're creating in the world. So, I'm about to do my last in this lifetime work design workshop for our community. And is really about looking at why we design work, and especially young entrepreneurs tend to have great ambition, great aspiration, but they copy and borrow old traditional work design. And so they put in incentives or rewards. My last book, which was another Amazon bestseller, number one bestseller, says the most important thing for you to do is get rid of all behavioral processes, all incentives, rewards, recognition that's formal, because that gets people looking at themselves, whether they're going to get that incentive and reward.
Right, right.
And design, my granddaughter, for example, they at her school ask, instead of giving kids in the class an award for best student or highest grade or most of this one, They asked the students in the class what they thought people would be recognized for. They came up with five awards the kids did. And then they said, well, who would you nominate for those? And so the class voted on who got nominated. So none of it came from the teacher, because that redirects people. So my granddaughter won one of the awards for hardest working student in science, because everybody thinks that's hard. And so that's one award they gave. But it came from the kids honoring themselves.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. And a company, another thing you can do to avoid the reward and recognition is have a little kitty of money that when a team accomplishes something, they recognize themselves and share it with everyone and how it serves the company. So switching this from internal to external recognition and creates intrinsic motivation and a much better place to work than wondering what the bosses are going to honor and recognize.
Yeah.
And then we compete. And then we feel bad because we were a part of whatever someone won an award for and we didn't get recognized. So
yeah,
that's kind of the latest blogging I'm doing. And it's my last most recent book.
So cool. So I read on your website about, or I think it was one of your blogs actually, that you talk about regenerative approach to mentoring in business. So I'd love to hear more about that, because a lot of companies struggle with mentor programs, what to do, how to do it, how to monitor it. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Okay. I'm not a coach. I've never believed in coaching. And I only believe in one kind of mentoring, and I call it resourcing. And resourcing means resourcing, which means returning people to themselves as a source, not me, not the outside world. And so I work a lot with getting people to create premises, even the company. And my book, The Responsible Entrepreneur, has a lot of small companies who've done this kind of mentoring internal, where they write premises about what they believe and all work on them together. And then when you're resourcing someone, you're always bringing them back to some they help create. And the key is to get away from having them see you as an expert or authority. And in fact, if anyone says I'm an expert, I deny it as quickly as I can. Coach, no, I don't deserve to be a coach. I want you to think for yourself. And so my job is to use a framework to help you think through and ask questions. Be a Socratic leader. And I should take that article you just referenced and repost it, because it was one of my most, what do they call it, tagged blogs that I
Very
wrote.
Good. Yeah. Repurpose. Definitely.
Yeah, right.
So share a bit about the four archetypes of entrepreneurship and how they can help us achieve what you say as a better world.
Okay. That's in the book, The Responsible Entrepreneur, four archetypes. And I learned these, or the version I'm going to give you and put in the book, from my grandfather. As I said, he was part Mohawk, which is Iroquois Nation. And they were, his great-great-great-grandfather was on the Trail of Tears from Georgia, where you are, Oklahoma. And that's because his family were slaves. Tribes at that time were the Scottish sold a lot of people they picked up in New York and sold them in the South. So my grandfather said they had to recreate a nation because they were scattered. And these four archetypes or how they did it. So if you've got a small business, they're very helpful. The first one is a head man or head woman, and that archetype. And you're not one of these. You have to be all of them, and you have to be them in the right time and place.
Yeah.
And the head woman, which I'll use for now, is helping people think better and be able to be in communication with each other so they're good decision makers. Sorry, I have to sit. I have ALS, so I run out of breath once in a while, but not words, not ideas. No, sometimes I get a little, I have to take a breath or two. The second archetype is a hunter, and the hunter is not about feeding people, but asking, how does everything get fed? Everything get fed. The trees and the forest, the animals that live there, the people that are here, and how do we tend T-E-N-D, the ecosystem, so everything gets fed. The clown is the one who asks, what's the elephant in the room? What are nobody looking at? What's no one asking? And now, how do I become, I'm a contrarian on this, so it wakes people up. And the warrior is a fourth archetype. It's not about fighting. It's about asking, what's worth fighting for?
Yeah.
And what's worth putting our energy to, rather than just, how do we go to war? And so my grandfather taught me when I was very young to ask in a situation, what was called for? Was it a headman? Had one more question. Was it a hunter question, a clown, or the warrior? He said, it was important that I noticed I tended to go to war quickly and forgot to be a real warrior. And asked, what's this word fighting for? It was a lesson I had to learn when I founded my first company, which was pattern drafting and dress design. Weird. I sold the company to Butterick, but I learned how to really ask through the archetypes what was the right question and the right role. So if they want to know more, check out the Responsible Entrepreneur for Archetypes and get a little deeper. And there are 13 stories of real entrepreneurs in that book, living from these as they ran their small business.
Okay, so I also know that as a project manager for many years, one of the things that most people had a difficulty with was change. And most of the time for us to get to be better, to improve any process, there has to be a change agent for your business or your teams. So talk to me about any advice that you would give for being a change agent.
So I wrote a book about that, number 6, called Indirect Work. And Indirect Work said the reason people become afraid of change, they're not born that way, they're raised that way necessarily, is because we're constantly trying to change them. It's not the change they're afraid of, it's being changed. And so indirect work is about anytime you want to create a change, ask what development needs to happen. And by development, I don't mean training. I mean inner development, inner work, and development of will, and development of purpose, and corporate direction. And so if we want to bring about a change, don't be the one who's in charge of it. You become the Socratic leader. You're asking the questions if you're the owner or boss, and work on it indirectly instead of telling people or bringing in a consulting company, which I've never done either. I don't believe in consulting, coaching, advising. I'm an educator. And education and development is a foundation of real and meaningful change, because then we're working from the inside out, but we're connecting it to meaningful work on the outside.
Very good. Yes, can't stress enough having that education piece.
Yeah.
So for a couple rapid fire questions, you're 81.
Yeah.
What do you wish you knew when you were 30?
I don't wish I knew anything younger. And nothing. Perfect. I always thought that question is bizarre.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have known what to do with it. I don't even know what I think I'll live a few more years. ALS is a strange disease. Stephen Hawking had it. You don't know how long you'll live. I've had it 11 years. Most people die in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
So I think about time very differently. And I don't want anything to have happened earlier than I was able to live it.
Yeah. And when you said you had ALS, it did surprise me, because I had one of my supervisors when I was just starting as, or she was my manager, and I was just a new supervisor, and she got it, and we only had her 3 years.
Yeah, that's the average.
Yeah.
I'm loving it. It's great, exciting. I'm learning about dying consciously. Who knew I get to do it with full brain power working, writing books? So
I know, that's so awesome. You're just like so inspiring to me, gosh. So I know you probably, again, given this, you live for the present. I think that's it's what everybody should try to do, you know, even if you don't have a chronic disease. But a lot of people worry about what they're going to do in the future and put things off to the future. What have you learned about just, you know, every time you had to write a book, did you worry about if you were capable of writing that book, or, you know?
I don't worry. I've never been a worrier. I've been a contrarian. And if I get an idea, that drives me. I do, I'll tell you how to tie time together. I do what I call long thought thinking, which means I take a subject that, like for me, that subject's been the role of consciousness and the contribution of humans. Well, that's a huge question. So I've been writing about that since I was 22. And every year I have a new idea. Every time I finish a book, I can go, and the key is go deeper. I never write the same thing twice. You ask me about a blog, and since you don't remember what I wrote, because the real thing is I've changed my thinking about it. That way I wrote about 3 years ago. My thing is outdated.
Yeah.
So thinking about, my rule is never do anything the same way twice. Never answer a question the same way twice. Be present and see if you can get you to think about it deeper than you did a year ago. And that, I think if all human beings did that, we'd all be so smart. And I help design companies, so individuals are doing that, and their whole company grows because everybody has long thought thinking.
That's awesome. I remember as I was, you know, trying to delve deeper in understanding how to be a better active listener. And that's one of the things, is you keep on asking that question, tell me more, tell me more. And I'm a big what ifs. I love thinking about what ifs. I think that's why I love project management so much, because it was constant opportunity to ask, tell me more, understanding your process, and then thinking of, well, what if we did this differently?
And this is my idea, is a slight twist on that. So try this. It's not some learning from out there. It's demanding you create the next answer yourself based on building. And then you put it out in the world, see what people do, how it works. And you ask again, how else could I personally, Carol, take that question, that idea I had, dig it deeper. And I use frameworks that force me to increase my perspective, increase my depth. And if I do that, I'm smarter every year, and I can make a bigger difference every year.
No, and I think that's why you stay so sharp at 81.
Yeah. Well, luckily, ALS doesn't attack your brain. It attacks your muscles and your nerves.
Yeah.
But
that's what my friend said, that her brain made her, that was her frustration, because she was a big thinker, and she just couldn't get her body to do what she knew she needed to do.
Yeah, you can hear my tongue has trouble cooperating with me, and my hands on a, I can't write anymore. They don't work. I can type if I'm careful, but you do what you can do. Every day I can do something I can, but I also still have many ways. I'm writing my eighth book, and I'm dictating it, which is hard, but it gets sent to me every night what we did. I have a colleague who helps me be able to get all this down. So you do whatever you can, and the day I can't do it, I'll say goodbye.
Oh, you just are such a gem. I am so happy we got to have this time together. It's been such a pleasure.
Too.
If you that are listening enjoyed this as much as I did and want to find out more, I will put on my slide before I post this, some of the book covers from the book she has, so you can find those easily, some of the ones she mentioned today. And definitely check those books out on Amazon. Number one bestseller. You got to be able to find Carol Sanford easily on that search. But I'm going to share my slide that has her contact information. If you're just listening, make sure you grab a paper and pencil to get the website down. If not, you know that you can go to my YouTube channel. Please subscribe, as well as my findyourleadershipconfidence.com. But I am going to read her website for you. And if you're watching, you can get a screenshot. So as I said, her website is carolsanford.com. Easy peasy, carolsanford.com. On LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, just search for Carol Sanford. And Sanford is S-A-N-F-O-R-D. So again, the website is carolsanford.com. I will let Carol talk to you a little bit about some things you might find on her website or those social media sites. Carol?
So one of the things you can, on carolsanford.com, there's a publication on the navbar. It'll drop you down to all seven of my books and an overview and a first chapter. So that's worth going to. I also have some other things called Carol Sanford Institute, which we don't have here, but it's for businesses. And I have many offerings that I do that you can come to one-day events and learn about the communities that people join. So it gives you kind of a taste of my world. And I don't do any of this alone. I'm always in community.
Such a great thing. All right. So again, CarolSanford.com has got all the answers for you out on that website. So go there. Well, Carol, I just had such a great time talking with you today. Great conversation. You are a wealth of information. And I hope in 20 years, when I'm close to 81 there, I'll be older than 81. But in less than 20 years, I hope my mind is as sharp as yours. And you just have so much great knowledge. I'm happy that you put it in book form so we can take care of grabbing that information. Thanks so much for being a guest.
You're a great interviewer. And so I think you will be sharp for a long time because you're very present. So thanks for including me and letting me contribute to your work.
Oh, thank you. And as always, I remind everyone that life is a journey and it's up to you to enjoy the ride. This is Vicki Nethling signing off.
Thank you for tuning into the Find Your Leadership Confidence Podcast with Vicki Nethling, where we share impactful lessons that help you grow as an individual, grow your confidence, and find the positive and good within you so you powerfully and authentically become the best version of yourself. Remember to visit our website at www.findyourleadershipconfidence.com and enjoy even more great episodes like this one. Again, while you're here, subscribe to us via your favorite network. We look forward to seeing you next time on the Find Your Leadership Confidence Podcast.